Copper Sun, page 12. The drum beats rippled in the darkness. The dancers swayed and stomped on the hard-packed earth, and Amari's people clapped and laughed as the firelight glimmered in the night. The first explosion came from the end of one of the unusual weapon sticks the strangers carried. Louder than the beat of even the largest drum, it was followed by a cry of horror. The chief had fallen off his seat, a huge red bleeding hole in the center of his chest. More explosions followed in rapid succession, then everyone was screaming. Confusion and dust swirled throughout the village. Amari watched, aghast, as a mother with her baby wrapped on her back tried to flee. But both mother and child were clubbed down into the dirt by one of the Ashanti warriors. An Ashanti? How could this be? Villagers ran blindly into the fire, trying to escape and screaming for mercy, only to be felled by the terrible fire weapons of the strangely pale man. Amari knew she should run, knew she should try to escape into the forest, but her feet would not move. She could only stare in horror. She gasped as she watched an Ashanti grab her mother and try to put thick iron cuffs on her mother's wrist. She turned her head and followed in slow motion, it seemed, her father's bellows of rage as he leaped toward her mother to rescue her. But even before he reached her, one of the milk-faced men thrust a knife into his stomach, and her father fell silently to the earth. Amari's mother screamed in anguish and bit her captor's hand. In rage, he hurled her to the ground. Amari watched, unable to breathe or move, as her mother's head smashed upon a rock. Amari wanted to scream, "Mother, get up! Oh, please get up!" But she was unable to say a word. Her mother did not move. Amari needed her parents to come get her, to tell her not to be afraid, to run with her into the underbrush for safety. But they just lay there, their blood beginning to stain the dust. Amari doubled over in agony. Her parents were dead. She looked frantically for Besa and Kwesi, but all was smoke and screams and death. Finally, she saw Kwesi running toward her, screaming, "Run, Amari, run!" Her feet loosened then as he reached her. She grabbed his hand, and they ran wildly out of the village into what they hoped was the safety of the darkness. Sharp branches cut Amari's face as she plunged through a thick tangle of trees. The smell of sharp, acrid smoke, not of gentle hearth fires, but of the flames of destruction, followed them. Birds and monkeys above them cried out in alarm, but their noise could not cover the screams of the slaughter of her people. Suddenly, Amari heard fast-moving, thudding footsteps behind them and the whirr of a spear. Kwesi held her hand tighter, and they ran even faster, Amari trying in vain to be as invisible and swift as the wind. "Fly, my baby brother," she thought desperately. "Fly away." One moment, they were leaping over a fallen log, and the next, she heard Kwesi moan softly, then his hand slipped slowly from hers. He slumped to the ground, a look of soft surprise on his small face. A spear had sliced through his whole little body. Amari sank down beside him and held him to her. He died in her arms. She lay there in the darkness, cuddling his small, lifeless body, unable to weep, unable to run any longer. She hardly cared when she was grabbed by one of the strangers. Her arms were wrenched behind her, and iron shackles with heavy, rusty chains between them were snapped onto her wrist, holding them there. Amari was marched back to where the burning village had once stood so happily, grabbed by her hair and shoved into a pile of other survivors from the village. No one spoke. No one wept. They were defeated.